Welcome to Ambleside Flourish, brought to you by Ambleside Schools International. This is our series on the pursuit of maturity with Dr. Bill St. Cyr, Executive Director of Ambleside Schools International, hosted by Ambleside School of Colorado. Part 1 continued.
Well, let me shift gears here and talk more specifically about maturity. What we mean by it, what we don't mean by it, what the stages of maturity are, and then more specifically, what the tasks at the infant level of maturity are. Because many, many 30-year-olds have not mastered the infant level maturity tasks, as you'll see when we get to them. First, maturity versus other developmental tasks. One developmental task is physical development. I mean, our bodies are meant to grow. But given a reasonably healthy physical environment and sufficient food and room to exercise and places to walk and to run and to sprawl, given general physically healthy conditions, physical development happens. Most of us have not had to worry about our children growing up physically. Also, age-appropriate cognitive and neuromotor skills are important. At a certain age, round one, plus or minus, a little after, we start to learn to walk, right? That is an important neuromotor skill, very complex. It's not the same thing as maturity, but it is an important developmental skill. How to talk. A little later, how to cook a meal. How to solve a trig problem. Some of us haven't mastered that yet. But these are all cognitive motor and motor development skills, right? The confusion that we make is we tend to think if a person has a certain physical development and has mastered certain cognitive skills. In other words, they know how to drive a car. They know how to write an essay. They're lucent in conversation. They've mastered certain skills. We assume they're at that same level of maturity. And it's absolutely not the case. You can have a very healthy 24-year-old body that knows how to do a lot of stuff, but is functioning emotionally, relationally like a 2-year-old. So what do we mean by maturity? By maturity, we mean mastering age-appropriate emotional relational skills. Notice that's different. And emotional relational skills are different from how do I speak a foreign language? How do I drive a car? And one of the mistakes we've made as a culture is we have systematically ignored the importance of those skills. We've assumed that somehow they would just happen. Something akin to physical development. My child develops physically, I just feed him, and so he's going to develop emotionally, relationally. He will naturally mature. And it doesn't happen that way. That's why we get 30-year-olds who function like 3-year-olds. So, a quick overview of the levels of maturity. First, there's the infant level. That's 0 to 3 years old. And by these levels, it's really the time in which you've got certain developmental tasks to accomplish. So an infant, age 0 to 3, ideally, based on their brain structures and brain development, has certain emotional relational tasks to accomplish. Between the ages of 4 and 12, they now have sufficient cognitive brain development that they can now accomplish the child maturity tasks. Obviously, when you start at 4, you haven't mastered all the child maturity tasks. But you now have at least the brain apparatus to do that. Age 13 to one's first child, the adult stage of development. Notice, no adolescent. There is no, we are not wired for a stage of adolescence. All adolescence is a refusal to take up the adult tasks. So I'm older, but I'm still playing around with the child developmental task or the infant developmental tasks. Adult 13 to 14, and 13 to first child, and then from that point on, parent level of maturity. And that's first child until the departure of the youngest child from the home. Again, certain emotional, relational tasks to be mastered. And then finally, the final stage of one's life, ideally we function as an elder. Later on, I'll talk about the child, adult, parent, and elder stages. But today, I want to just focus on the infant level of maturity. So what are the infant maturity tasks? Now, what is it that between the birth and the end of one's third year of life, the child ideally should accomplish? First task. This is the task that immediately after a child is born, most important thing to the child, what the child's wired for. And that is, most important first thing is to joy bond. Now, the first question on a child's mind, it's obviously preverbal, when a child is born, is to whom do I belong? Because I can't do life by myself. So to whom do I belong? And looks up into the face of mom and then in the face of dad. You're the ones to whom I belong. In fact, neuroscientists have identified a part of the brain called the thalamus, which is at the top of the brain stem. And some developmental neuroscientists call that the center of the attachment light. In other words, it's on this quest. To identify to whom I belong, because that person's going to tell me how to do life. No child is born knowing how to do life. Who's going to tell me? The one to whom I belong. And what is critically important is that when the one to whom I belong looks down upon me, I see a bright, smiling face that says, gee, I'm glad we belong together. Now, that's hugely important. It's hugely important for parents. It's hugely important for teachers. Joy, and I don't mean happiness. Joy is that we belong together. Joy is the oil in the crankcase of life. Take a classroom that's low joy, the gears start to grind. Everything starts to come up. Take a family that's low joy, everything starts to grind to a halt. Don't mean happiness. Every family goes through sadness. Joy, that sense of, isn't it good that we are together? I belong to you, you belong to me, isn't it good? And a child look up and see that? A child looks up and sees the one that I belong to go bright-faced? That's huge. You can face anything if the person you belong to is bright-faced. So that actually gives us a bit of a challenge to be bright-faced people. Doesn't mean that we're not sad. In fact, as one is mastering the parent developmental tasks, one of the things one learns to do is to be sad together and still bright-faced. Because if I have to go through this sadness, I wouldn't want to go through this sadness with anybody else but you. Good to be together. I belong to you. You belong to me. Number one task to joy bond. Earliest thing on a newborn's mind. Second thing is to develop trust. Now, the one that I belong to, can I trust them? Are they reliable? Are the big people in my life trustworthy? If so, I can develop the neurological structures, the neural networks, the brain wiring that allows me to trust. There's actually a part of the brain. Now, all of this is somewhat tentative because the brain is the most complex thing in the universe. There's nothing more complex than the human brain. But there seems to be a little almond-shaped structure in the limbic system called the amygdala that seems to be part of this process, particularly in a very young infant. And what the amygdala seems to do is tag significant persons as good, bad, or scary. And one of the most destructive things in a child's life is when the one I belong to gets tagged as bad or scary. That will make life very, very painful and very, very difficult. However, if the one to whom I belong gets tagged as good, well, now we've got a solid foundation to build on. Second developmental task, to trust. To trust. Third developmental task, to begin to organize myself, my core self into a personality. In other words, I start to have consistency in response patterns. So the way I live is not random. The way I live starts to have a certain coherence to it. And that is done through imitation. Principally of the ones imitating the ones to whom I belong. And the community to whom I belong. How do I know to look someone in the eyes when they address me? How do I know that? I only know that because the community to which I belong has the habit when someone addresses, we look at each other in the eyes. Now, that's an enormous amount of information. And so for some children, it can cause a little bit of overload and takes more practice and more time. But there are a few things as important as eye contact. Have you ever been in a group where all the children simply ignore the adults? Where they act as if there's no adult there? In fact, often, sometimes you're in groups where they're acting as if there's nobody else there that matters. Again, they have not had the right kind of community surrounding them to cultivate the right kind of sense of self. Who I am is who I am, not just me alone, but it's also who I am with you. It's who we are together. And there are certain ways we respond to one another. Certain cues we give one another. Third developmental task, to begin to organize myself into a coherent person. And that's principally through imitation. Fourth, I learn how to regulate and quiet every emotion. Particularly the six painful primary emotions. So if you're human, you experience sorrow, anger, fear, hopelessness, disgust, and shame. Those are the painful six. And the interesting thing is, they all seem to be principally processed in something called the right cingulate gyrus. That's a part of the brain. You've got two of them. You've got a right and a left. And it's on the top of the limbic system, just below the cerebral cortex. And they run from behind your eyes to the back of your head. So think bananas. So you've got two bananas in your brain. And the one on the right cingulate gyrus, that seems to be, in most people, the core center for emotional self-regulation. Here's the interesting thing. It is almost completely undeveloped at birth. That it differentiates and becomes sophisticated and takes its formal shape first 18 months. And that's the part of the brain that processes emotional distress and allows you to stay your best self. So ask yourself the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well do I emotionally self-regulate on a consistent basis? And what happens when my cingulate gyrus goes bright red on a PET scan because it's overtaxed? Well, the children, they're not born knowing how to experience sorrow and not completely unwind. How do you experience sorrow and stay your true self? In other words, stay your real personality. How do you do that? It's a learned skill. It's a maturity task that ideally is accomplished significantly by the age of 3. Now, as you can imagine, as a culture, we're not doing real well on that one. But in terms of our brain wiring, we're made to have mastered that task significantly. Now, there's always extremes that put us to the test. But we talk of capacity. I mean, how big is your cup before you stop being your best self? And generally, of the six painful emotions, we do some better than others. Like some of us do sorrow real well. Give me a lot of sorrow and I can stay my best self. Some of us, I can really be angry, but I'm not going to stop being my best self. Others can do shame well. But sometimes we have a weak link where maybe, for me, example, I think I've told you that. For me, of the six, shame is the one that I have spent the most time over the last 30 years working on so that I could handle shame and stay my best self. And not be run into the ground if I get in a shame-filled situation. I could still respond lovingly and graciously and kind rather than becoming reactionary. 30 years ago, you put me in shame, I would not have stayed my best self. On the other hand, I've always been pretty good at sorrow. That's a gift of my parents. My parents did sorrow very well. So I do sorrow very well. My parents didn't do shame so well, so I didn't learn how to do shame so well. Interestingly, though, so we can learn from others. So doesn't mean just because we've got a weakness, we're done. So for all of us, we can continue to grow in these maturity tasks. The next developmental task. Oh, and I should say, think about your own children and ask yourself, what is their capacity? How well do they emotionally self-regulate? And one of the sad things is now we tend to medicate rather than cultivate the skills of emotional self-regulation. And so we suppress rather than... Medication doesn't treat. In very rare cases does it treat. It does compensate. And they, when we talk about psychotropic meds, that's a whole other discussion. So, again, I'm not totally against them, but they're vastly overprescribed, and that would be a whole other discussion. When such meds are appropriate, and how do we really know what we're doing? But though the skill of emotionally self-regulating can be learned over time, and it is essential. There are a few tasks, think of those in the workplace. I mean, you all know people who don't emotionally self-regulate well. What kind of an employee are they? We probably all know those buttons we can push on our spouses, which will get them to not emotionally self-regulate so well. Right? Or the buttons they push on us. Let me tell you, anytime you cease being your best self, or I cease being my best self, that's my issue, it's not my wife's issue. If I stop emotionally self-regulating well and staying my best self, my wife might have pushed my buttons, but she's not responsible for whether I'm an adult. She's not responsible for whether I'm emotionally self-regulating well. And if I have an area of immaturity, that's mine to own and mine to work on. Now, it'd be nice if she worked on not pushing my buttons. That might be supportive and helpful, but still... Actually, I think that's one of the things God does. God gives us someone who will push our buttons so we have to grow up. I think that's part of the plan. It's not just for all the great benefits and blessings. It's not for the good things, but it's also to have someone that'll push our buttons and force us to grow up where we're still immature.
Thank you for listening to Ambleside Flourish's series on the pursuit of maturity with Dr. Bill St. Cyr, Executive Director of Ambleside Schools International, hosted by Ambleside School of Colorado. Ambleside Schools International fosters an educational renewal based upon the pedagogical insights of British educator Charlotte Mason. Serving an international community of parents, teachers, and schools, Ambleside makes a living education accessible to all. For additional information regarding Ambleside Schools International and training opportunities for principals, teachers, and parents, please visit our website at ambleside schools.com.